They do these protests.
I'd love to see how much money you're making on these protests. You're getting people to donate because you're doing this activities in Dane County? That's the ugly side of this stuff. Are you confident that's not what they're doing here? They already got the
win. Are you confident that they are?
They got the win. July 1st, they can't breed animals.
You're alleging something.
Yes, I am.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
And good morning, everybody. 10:08 on 620 WTMJ. Kristen Bride, good morning.
Good morning.
Yours truly, Steve Scafidi, here with you. Just a quick mention, because I saw that it just went public. Our friend and your teammates at the Journal Sentinel, Dan Bice, passed away. Incredible journalist. Yeah. We're going to try to... I'm reaching out to some of his close friends that worked with him. Not that you're not one, but just to get their reaction. Far too young. One of those stories of cancer. I can remember when we had him in studio. Because
Having him regularly. Yeah. We had him every Monday. It happened for like a month.
Yeah, literally at that same time period, he was diagnosed and now has passed. So
fast.
Yeah. We've all dealt with tragedy in our lives, but this one hits close to home. As somebody who is probably more respected in the work that he did, I mean, journalism has taken a heavy hit, but boy, Dan did it the right way, and he had no fear.
Yeah.
He was a guy that just went. He just went.
Did not care what people thought of him.
Nope. And
broke some incredible stories over the year. Took down a fair amount of campaigns and political hopefuls.
Yeah. As most recently as last year. So, I mean, this is a sad day for journalism and a sad day for his family, obviously. So condolences from Kristen and I. It's just I hate news like this because, again, taken too young. Just sad.
Ashley Lutheran over at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel wrote the write-up. It's on the homepage of Journal Sentinel right now if you want to go read about it. Great first line. Everyone talked to Daniel Bice, whether they admitted it or not.
Right? There's many, because we had him in studio so many times, and there's things that he didn't write about that he knew.
He's waiting for or needed more on. Or,
yeah, because, I mean, being a journalist, he always had to have everything had to be sourced, independent sources. And boy, he was so good at it. And you and I were talking, when we heard this news by text this morning. I don't know that kind of journalism at traditional newspapers is going to be around anymore, because it seemed like that stuff's all online now and just done in a different way. I don't know that sort of a reporter exists anymore. Like, who's the next Dan Bice?
I mean, we still have good investigative reporters. Mary Spicuzza does a good job.
It's just different, though. He approached it differently, I think. He was a unique writer.
Well, he also had earned, because he'd worked for Journal Sentinel for 33 years, because of his reputation, he walked a line as far as being columnist and investigative reporter, right? Yeah. Like, he wrote differently than when you read Jesse O'Point or Molly Beck, who are just much more factual and objective. Like, when he wrote about things, he had a definitive voice and sarcasm and, like, wit to some of the perspective that I think he threaded into his journalism.
Yeah, so tough day at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So for all those folks, I really loved and appreciated Dan, because he was so good at what he did, but he made it fun. So when he came in that little bit of time we shared on those Mondays, and he was always here after Matt Smith, it just was a joy to talk to someone that knew their job as well as he did and knew how to approach these stories and probably had his finger on the pulse of this community and the states when it came to politics better than almost anybody else. I mean, that's how good he was. So a sad day for those of you who know his work and certainly who know him personally. We'll try to get back to that at some point on the show today, but that's a name to remember. Dan Bice, a legend in Milwaukee journalism, and passing away far too young. We'll take a quick break here. We've got a lot of other stories to get to on the show today. She's Kristen. I'm Steve. It is Point Taken on 620 WTMJ.
Ooh, a lucky man he was. Ooh,
all right, so this is going to be our lead, but we certainly wanted to mention that the passing of our friend Dan Bice from the Journal Sentinel. The The question that a lot of people are going to have about this administration, the Trump administration 2.0, second term of this president, Donald J. Trump, is some of the things that are swirling around. There's always these backstories, and some of it might be conspiracy theories, some of it might be something else, but there are growing concerns that bets being placed, money being made, millions of dollars being made in some cases, have to do with very timely bets made. I think one case was 15 minutes before something happened. In that case, it was a military strike. The other one, March 23rd, $600 million made in oil futures trades. That's the 15 minutes before the president had said he would hit the publicly said he would hit the Iran power plants. And you and I have talked about this before, these poly markets and what's
Kalshi.
Kalshi. The opportunity with no rules, betting, essentially, anonymous to everyone. We know that when you trade in the traditional markets, there's a record, there's rules, there's laws, there's codification of how things should be done. Well, many of these sort of off-site betting platforms, off-country betting platforms in some cases, have no rules. And it does beg the question, are some members of the administration, this administration, the Trump administration, utilizing information they know, because they're in the circle of trust of the president, to make money and enriching themselves? Now, to be fair, the White House has, and I want to get this right, issued a warning to their staff that this is illegal. That warning went out, and it's been made public. It's a short notice. But it does give you pause that this kind of money's being made. And it does. The timing of it suggests that someone has inside information.
It walks like a duck and talks like a duck. It's probably a duck.
So there's two things. One, yes, we need to regulate these platforms. But also, we have to make sure there's talking about our friend Dan Bice, we need to make sure there's investigative journalists that are on the case to find out who's doing this.
Or actual investigations from the SEC. So
right.
New York Post, not known for being like a liberal rag.
No.
Had their editorial boards put this out this morning. Americans deserve to know who's behind those suspiciously timed Iran war-related trades. And like you said, to the public, people who make these trades, it happens anonymously. But to regulators, they actually do have the power. So the Securities and Exchange Commission or the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, they do have the power to investigate here if they suspect foul play, because the companies, the platforms, know who these people are.
Yes.
And so I think that is the next move, right? As far as these two commissions using the power that they have to start figuring out who are these people who are making such well-timed bets on people's literal lives.
150 polymarket accounts placed bets, hundreds of bets, on a U.S. strike on Iran before the first strike. Now, yeah, there was probably some conversation across the world about what we would do with Iran, given that we were concerned about nuclear weapons and all that. But the timing of it does seem suspect to me. Now, I'm not alleging or accusing anyone of doing anything illegal, but I think the thing I love about traditional trading and investing is there's a receipt for all those. I know if Annex makes a trade on my behalf, there's a record of that, when it happened, what was purchased, what was sold. It's all right there. I'm not sure these companies, they know, but I'm not sure they're as concerned as they should be about what's happening with some of this stuff. I would think in their own interest, if someone makes a bet, they know what's going to happen. That's not really a bet. They're just making money. There's no risk there. Why would a polymarket or a Kalshi, why would they want to take the loss? So I know some people bet the other way.
They're making tons of money right now.
Making billions of dollars, yeah. It's just ugly.
I hate it. I don't know. I actually have not talked to anyone yet who says these are a good thing. If you think that these prediction markets are good for society, I would love to hear from you. 855-616-1620. Because maybe this is just my side of the internet or the stories that I see. I don't see a strong defense of why this is a value add to society. As far as, I mean, it's a value add to people who are actually making money and betting on there, but.
Yeah. Well, because there's no rules. Anybody can be, like, right now, I can't bet on, what is it, Wisconsin college teams in the state of Wisconsin, even though I live in Wisconsin. I can bet on the pro teams. But in other states, they have different rules. But on this stuff, I could bet on literally anything, right? I mean, they have prop bets essentially for any political, sports, pop culture, probably. There's no rules. And I would think, regardless if the administration and the staff is being warned, what about members of their immediate families? And then how is that connection ever made, right? So, oh, yeah, my cousin in New Jersey just happened to make that bet 15 minutes prior to an attack on Iran. Really? Let's find out who your cousin's related to that works for the White House. You know, that kind of stuff.
But it's also, this goes into sports betting, right? Like, we know that there's a huge problem with sports betting and the amount of men, more often, let's
young
be honest,
men,
who are going into debt because of the easy access and the dopamine and everything that happens with betting.
Yeah.
And then what is the output of that? We also see a huge rise in threats against athletes, right? People lose money,
yeah,
and then they go into the DMs or the comment section to college athletes, let alone professional athletes, sure, but also college athletes, and threats of violence. This is what they see, like the games, like even WNBA, because people are betting on those games now.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of negative externalities to this culture.
We're going to have to sort this out. We can't live in a society where there's no rules for some people and rules for other people. But beyond that, we need a Department of Justice, SEC, Security Exchange Commission, that actually have rules and then track down the people who violate the rules. If that's not happening, wink, wink, nod, nod stuff, which is some of the belief here on some of these platforms, I think we're in for a mess of trouble. And I think this is very dangerous. And the last thing I think before we go to break is, if a individual has access to information before anyone else has it, and can just make money, that's just an unlimited ability to cash in. We're talking millions and millions of dollars that could be made really with no risk at all. I know when I go to Vegas and gamble, there's risk. Depending on what I'm playing, could be 50-50, could be more, you know, 20 in my favor, 80 in the house.
Well, the risk is that they lose money.
Yeah.
The bet, I mean, unless they have inside information.
That's what I mean. They already know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
If the missiles are being launched in 15 minutes, you probably know. That's dangerous. I want to live in a country where the rules matter. And in this case, whether it's SEC, Department of Justice, whatever it is, they don't seem to be going after this. And we're not getting a lot of defense on these platforms. So not sure what the nakedness piece was.
I think it's probably saying porn doesn't have a value add either.
Oh, interesting point. But what's your thoughts on that? Yeah, I don't even have, I can't respond to that. Anyway.
Tongue-tied? Steve? You?
Yeah. Mm. Porn is porn. It's been around forever. It's probably going to be around forever. And I guess that would be my final thought on that. All right, we'll take a break here. She's Chris and I'm Steve. But I got to one of the texters, Aaron from Greenville. How about an SEC investigation into congressional stock trading? Also bad. Making millionaires out of people who are just there to really do our work, who have now, because of often inside information, made millions of dollars in stock trades, or their family members have done this.
Tony Weed, the newest.
Yeah, all of a sudden he's got a lot more money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Already came in with a fair amount of money. But the Badger Project, shout out to Peter Cameron and the nonprofit Badger Project, investigative journalism, that they just wrote about that as far as the money he's made in his first term.
It's just absolutely astounding to me that a party that used to be, in my opinion, about law and order, it's just throwing the laws out the window. They don't care. Doesn't matter. Do what you want. Make money. Money is the driver, it seems like now. Any way you can make money is okay, as long as you're doing it. Now, anyone else does it, oh, we're going to look closely at that. Well, how can that happen? But if you're working in Congress, or at least you're elected to work in Congress, do whatever you want. Make illegal trades. Tell your family about things that are happening, inside information, so they can make money. I'm not a fan of these platforms, the poly markets. I'm not going to use them because until they're regulated, I don't trust them. And there may be opportunity for a lot of people to make a lot of money, but I don't care. I'm not doing it. And I think more people need to say that. But like I said before, these types of grift, and I'm calling it grift, often don't get discovered for years after an administration leaves. It takes that long to follow that paper trail, if there is one, what would be the modern equivalent, a digital trail of who made those trades? What did they know? When did they know it? How much did they make? Where'd that money come from? It pisses me off because it's not treating everybody the same way. Some people have advantages in life. That's never going to change. But this is a really an advantage because you have inside information that you're benefiting personally from.
If Democrats win the House and or the Senate.
Yes, I already know what you're going to ask.
How quickly do you think, where on the priority list is this investigation?
Day one.
Is it? I mean, there's a lot of, they're going to be chomping at the bit for a lot of different things to be pulling people into Congress every week.
If this lawlessness and this freedom that the current administration and their, their staffs and their representatives think they have now, that's going to go away if Democrats take over. Trust me, they will spend the next 2 years investigating this, every one of these stories, endlessly until they get to the bottom of it. Now, Republicans can pretend that that's just witch hunting, but we're talking about it now before those investigations have started because it's so glaringly obvious what's happening here.
Well, it's not even just this, right? I mean, what is it? What is the count as of right now that Trump and Trump's family has enriched themselves in the last
billions,
a little over a year by over $1.3 billion?
His properties have made money.
Oh, but also his sons with crypto.
Yeah.
It's insane how much money the Trump brothers, yeah,
who's making
Jared Kushner,
from other countries, and he's supposed to be an unelected negotiator for the United States now because he's his son-in-law. What's his resume? Why does he get to be that person? Why does he get to benefit financially from that stuff? Texter makes a great point. Martha Stewart went to prison for insider training. She went to prison.
And survived it.
Probably.
Still popular. Good friends with Snoop Dogg.
She is. I never understood that relationship, but maybe they do.
It's all that matters.
God bless them if they have that relationship. All right. Lots more to talk about on the Tuesday edition. We have local news update coming up from Neil Doyle. What else do we have on the show today?
A lot of yapping between you and I. We don't have any guests today.
It's Talking Tuesday. That's how we branded it. Talking Tuesday.
Hashtag.
Talking Tuesday, rocking Tuesday here on Point Taken. Kristen Bry, Steve Spitty. I had a beagle when I grew up.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
What was its name?
Bootsy.
Bootsy. Boy or girl?
Boy. White paws.
But you were a dog family once you and Kathy got married, were you? Did you guys ever have a dog?
No. Because we're both kind of allergic to, like, pet
dander.
And especially cats. I get, like, my eyes get all red and, you know, a lot of people accuse me of being a cat hater. And I probably am in some weird way or not, but, yeah, it's mainly because of that. And Kathy didn't grow up with a dog. But the story out of Dane County, what's the name of the farm? Ridgeland? Let's find it real quick. It is called Ridgeland Farms Facility in Blue Mounds, small town about 25 miles southwest of Madison. They breed, or were breeding, because they've sort of pulled back now because they've been slapped by the state a few times for animal mistreatment. They were breeding beagles for scientific research, basically testing. And I was playing around just looking at stuff this morning. And one of the reasons they use beagles, because they're very docile, which that was our dog, very, very docile. They're the right size animal. They don't get too big or too small. They have the right physiology for testing with the things they need to test. Genetic consistency across every age group of the beagle. And they're perfect for laboratory research. That's sort of the why they use beagles. I'll be honest, though. I didn't know that this was even going on until I started seeing these protest stories. Now, they broke in one time, seized some of the animals.
That was in March.
And I think 60-some people got arrested for that. Because you're violating the law. You're breaking into private property. And then they had this planned protest for this. 1,000 people showed up.
On Saturday.
Now, the facility had set up sort of an interesting way to push back. They had, like, these manure moats.
Trenches full of manure.
Yeah, which is also, apparently, I was reading the Wisconsin State Journal, also a violation of state law. You can't do that. You can't take manure, put it in water, and use it as a moat or in any fashion like that because it's not good for the soil or groundwater. But anyway, so they tried it again, but they did it a day early before they were publicly announcing in their, you know, their platforms that they were going to do this. Look, having had a beagle, I understand that people are sensitive about this stuff, but to me, this research is essential as part of what we do as far as medicine and science. And it's the image of a beagle being.
Do you not think that in this day and age, there's better ways to do
so.
This between?
If there was, why wouldn't they do them?
But there are. I mean, I was looking at this morning because I was thinking the same thing. As far as there are human cell and tissue studies, organ on a chip tissue chip systems. There's computer models, advanced in vitro options, and then human based opt in clinical and observational research. Because I mean, that's a big thing here, right? It's like you have a sentient being. As a mammal who cannot consent versus human testing. And like, I think when we think about what we can do with science these days, as far as in vitro labs and all of these different advancements, like we haven't been able to evolve past animal testing.
Okay. So if that,
I know it's still legal. So I'm just saying, but as far as it's not, I think it's lazy to just throw up your hands. Like, well, so we're going to do, it's like, I think there are other options of what we could be doing.
Possibly, but maybe they're not as good. And I would say,
or maybe they're not as cheap.
Also possible as well. But I always defer to science. And if scientists and medical researchers are telling me they need live animals to do their research on, I'm probably going to agree with them.
But what kind of products are they even testing at Ridgeland specifically?
I have no idea. And frankly, should I care about these are people that are tasked with producing these animals for scientific research. That's their jobs, right? That's their business. Now, if they break the law, that's a different story. You're talking about going after people who, unless they mistreat animals, are following the laws of the land. So we're gonna start targeting companies because we don't like what they do.
I mean, that is what a protest is.
A peaceful protest, but not breaking into someone's private property
and taking property.
Right.
I think the what I understand of the story, because I've been having some people DM me. Who are animal rights activists trying to get more movement on the lawmaker side of this, because I think the frustration is there was already the settlement of Richland Farms saying they would give up their breeding license, but that doesn't happen until later this year.
July 1st.
And so the fact that that was even delayed in the first part, that is what they're frustrated about, that that's not being expedited. And the fact, like, how many more dogs will suffer while we wait?
Okay, one, they're presuming the dogs suffer, which we don't know, because you can certainly test animals without making them suffer. I would think at least at some basic level of human decency, scientific research is not going to make animals suffer for no reason. I mean, come on here. Now, the dates, that's a legal process. They can be angry that the date is July 1st and not, like, what, April 1st? That's a legal process. It was settled. You have to follow the laws of the land.
So I'm on their website right now, which really rough on the Ridgeland Farms. It's ridgeland.net, and the homepage is 3 beagle puppies. Woof. I'm not sure that's what, especially right now, like you're just, because you're not trying to adopt these dogs. Like, it's a weird thing to have these adorable puppies on your homepage, but I digress. Yeah. So it's not that they are creating their own products and testing. They are a service that you can hire to test your products. Because it's the first thing it says, let us help your research. Let us help with your research needs. Customer service is our number one priority. So they are contracted to do testing on these animals for whatever product. And so you click on the services tab, though, and you need to be logged in to be able to see that content. So they do not list what kind of services they actually offer until you're...
Well, I mean, private companies have control of their own websites.
I know.
It's not public.
It's just fishy.
Is it?
Kind of.
What bothers me is two things.
I feel like I'm missing something in this story.
What are you missing?
I don't know.
What do you want to know that you don't know?
Well, because I agree with you as far as the legality of, as of right now, Ridgeland Farms is working under what the law has said. They're going to sacrifice their license. They maintain that they have not mistreated animals. There is not enough evidence in the court of law to prove that they have. I guess I'm not close enough to the animal rights activist world to understand why this is getting so much priority on their, and like willing to put their you know, freedom on the line, right? As far as getting arrested, having rubber bullets shot at them,
pepper spray,
running through manure. As far as what they know or what they think is happening there, that it is worth this kind of protest.
Yeah, I mean, this place has been around for a little bit, so I would say take the win, July 1st, out of business.
But I don't think they're out of business because I don't think they're losing their research license.
They're giving up their state breeding. They can't breed animals for research. That's what it says. I'm reading it right from the thing. Give up their state breeding license. So if they bred animals, it would be against the law. So they got the win on that, the animal rights activists. As of July 1st, they're giving up their breeding license. How is that not a win? So not taking the win and then antagonizing, getting yourself arrested, pepper sprayed, beaten, probably in some cases, because you're going through a private property fence. Probably not a great resume item to have that on your personal criminal history, right? Breaking and entering private property because you're mad about something, even though you got the win, July 1st, can't breed the animals anymore. Take the win! Or, this is where I'm going to ask you a question, is this because they just want publicity for their efforts so they can do more of this
stuff? Could be. I mean, I don't know if it's to do more. I think it's to bring more,
yeah, more people
to try to maybe force the issue to be expedited.
Did you look up, and I didn't, these organizations that are protesting? Coalition, this one specifically, they always create new names, which is something interesting about protesters, because they can avoid the paper trail. Coalition to Save the Ridgeland Dogs, which is probably part of something else. Maybe, just maybe, they're trying to fundraise off this idea. So
They
do these protests. I'd love to see, also not going to be able to probably access that information, how much money you're making on these protests. You're getting people to donate because you're doing this activities in Dane County, which is probably, I'm guessing, an environment where a lot of people say, I support those efforts. I'm going to donate. That's the ugly side of this stuff. Are you confident that's not what they're doing here? They already got the win.
Are you confident that they are?
They got the win. July 1st, they can't breed animals.
You're alleging something.
Yes, I am.
You sound very confident that you think they're doing this, even though you just plucked that out of the air.
No, I didn't just pluck it out of the air. I thought about that this morning. There's a reason why people protest.
Do you want to go to the break and see? We're already very late for break. So would you like to see if there's like a GoFundMe or something set up that we can figure out?
Let's do that too. But here's what I'm going to say before the break.
Okay.
They don't do this. They do things for two reasons. One, they are angry about what's happening there. The other thing is they are trying to recruit more people for their causes. And to not think that is naive. That's what they're doing. They're making money.
You don't know that yet.
Let's look. Well, we'll do a research in the
Yeah, they might have a GoFundMe or something like that set up.
Let's check that out.
All right.
Quick break. You got to make this a quick segment because I talked so much in the first segment.
All right. What'd
you find out?
If you go to savethedogs.io, that is the group. There is a donate button, so it's not like a GoFundMe where you can see how much they've made, but there is a place to donate. And then they also have a tab that says the evidence or evidence, and it said a judge declared these dogs victims of felony cruelty. The state cut a deal that frees zero of them. Approximately 2,000 beagles remain inside. They have never seen sunlight, never felt grass, never been loved. The documented cases, vocal cords cut from 30 to 40 dogs per month, dying puppies thrown in garbage bags, mass burning of dead dogs. I mean, what the group is alleging is like, ugh. Like, I can see why they're so upset.
Just so people are clear, I'm not in support of animal cruelty, but I am in support of animal testing and animal research for life-saving efforts to save people. You mentioned their throats. I would imagine that's some sort of throat research on the impacts of cancer. And as we've learned, that can be very dangerous. So, look, people can protest for whatever they want. Where that stops for me is when you break into private property, steal other people's property. And I'll go back to what I said before. Take the win. They can only now breed for themselves. They can't breed for scientific research as of July 1st, which is a few months away. Take the win. Unless it's something else. Mm. Unless it's something else. And we got tons of texts on this. Some people say they usually agree with me, but not on this. That's fine.
I don't know. Now that I'm looking at they make a compelling case on savethedogs.io as far as potentially how bad this place is.
Let's simplify it.
Okay.
Are you in favor of animal testing? Live
not
animal
really.
Testing? Okay, that's your answer. I mean,
if there's other options, if there's other viable options, I think we should opt for, like, they should opt for that.
If those options work as well as live animal testing, sure. But I don't know that reality, because I'm not a scientist. But again,
should we try to hunt down a scientist?
I put it
scientist?
On my notes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we should do that. Because I think there's a reason why this practice has persisted. We can want something to be the reality. We can test in other ways. But there's probably a legitimate reason why research is done in the way it's done. And again, I always defer to science. I do not support animal cruelty. So I want to be clear about that. And if animals are mistreated, which I think is what happened here, and they got slapped for it, good job, state of Wisconsin, because that's what should have happened. But to have people just break into their facility, where does that end? You just break into private property when you don't like what anyone's doing? No.
I mean, there's consequences.
Absolutely.
They're obviously the people got arrested.
Yeah, they did. Or pepper sprayed, or worse.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting topic. And I'm not going to chill out to the texter from the 815.
If you were high, you might.
If I was, I might.
It's a callback to yesterday.
Yeah. If you listen to the show, and you should, you can always go back and find it on the podcast page at WTMG.com. All right. We are late for another break. Sorry. All right. As we head to May, I know it's not May yet, but in May, I honor first responders. And that can mean a lot of things. Public safety, healthcare, individuals who go above and beyond every day to impact the greater community, from firefighters, police officers, dispatchers, emergency room nurses, doctors. The stories are incredible. And each of our honorees that we'll pick in Hero Week in May demonstrate the value of doing the right thing in often the most difficult of times. But where I need your help, and by the way, before we get to that, thanks to 620 WTMJ for letting me do this, Waterstone Bank, Mission 94, Botanas, Packing House, will all sort of make this possible and reward our honorees. And it is a honor and a privilege to do this, and we've had some great award-winning stories over the years, but I need your help. You need to nominate these people so that I can actually select the five honorees. And trust me, that's not easy. One year we got like 150, which is a lot of, because a lot of times I don't just look at them and say, I have to call the people and ask them why you're nominating. So there's a lot of work behind the scenes. Somehow we winnow it down to like five, or in the case of last year, six, because we had both the firefighter who saved the life of a citizen, and then the firefighter who saved the firefighter's life. It was a double winner. First time we ever had that, and which is nominated for a WBA award this year, which is amazing. So just text the word salute, S-A-L-U-T-E, to 855-616-1620. Quick, easy form. I'm looking at it right now. Name, email, phone number, name of the first responder that you're nominating, any contact information, and then like really quick paragraph on why you're nominating them. That's all I need. I'll take it from there. We'll sort those out in the early part of May, and then we put all the pieces together. And you, Kristen, and I will welcome them to the show. Last half hour of Heroes Week, we bring them on. We celebrate the great stories. We play a great feature that Jazz puts together. It's just an amazing, amazing thing. So I'm happy to do that. So send those nominations. Salutes. S-A-L-U-T-E. Do you have someone you might nominate? Think about it.
I will.
All right. Busy 11 o'clock hour coming up. We're late for news. Late is a common theme of the show today because we're passionate. And I'm not going to chill out, even with weed, if it was legalized in the state of Wisconsin.
Go to break, man. We're so late.
News.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Welcome back. We're a little late because Steve talked too much in the first hour, but that's okay. He's still pent up from vacation.
That's what they pay me to do, actually.
That is what they pay you to do. Yeah. Yep, yep, yep. Yep, yep, yep.
Okay.
Sounds like a beagle.
You want to go back to that story?
No, we're moving on. We are moving on. All right. So it's been, this is not the first time that we've covered the fact that there are right-wing media personalities, be it Tucker Carlson, be it Megyn Kelly, Candace Owens, Alex Jones. I think even Tim Pool has started to break, but there is Joe Rogan has...
He's gone back and forth.
Theo Vaughn, but Theo Vaughn's not really a right wing. He's just kind of a dude who said that he was voting for Trump. But I don't know if this is the biggest rebuke of Trump that we've heard Tucker Carlson say so far, but on his show yesterday, he had his brother on, and, well, do we have a clip, Jazz?
you and I and everyone else who supported him. You wrote speeches for him. I campaigned for him. I mean, we're implicated in this for sure.
Yes.
It's not enough to say, well, I changed my mind, or like, oh, this is bad, I'm out. It's like, in very small ways, but in real ways, you and me and millions of people like us are the reason this is happening right now.
Yes.
So I do think it's like a moment to wrestle with our own consciences. You know, we'll be tormented by it for a long time. I will be. And I want to say I'm sorry for misleading people. And it was not intentional. That's all I'll say. But anyway, but the question does present itself immediately. Like, what is this? Was this always the plan? You don't want to be a conspiracy nut, but like, clearly there were signs of low character. We knew that.
Yes.
But it didn't, there are tons of people of low character who like outperform their character. It doesn't have to be.
Sort of the norm, actually, these days,
right.
I would say.
I've outperformed my character a lot. Kind of don't have especially high character, right? But, you know, you try to, whatever, you try your best. But what was this? Was this always the plan?
Minus the weird rationalization at the end, because, you know, there's, I guess he's saying some low character people are worth the investment. This is a big departure from the number of high profile people that celebrate this president and supported him along the journey.
Well, not only that, I mean, it's one thing for Tucker Carlson to talk about this on his show, but his son has left J.D. Vance's team. So his son was working for J.D. Vance. Buckley Carlson, who's really, those are two names that their parents went, Buckley and Tucker.
Yeah.
Well. Buckley sounds like a Beagle's name. Just saying. Mm-hmm. Anyways, Buckley Carlson was also a speechwriter. He has left the White House to now start his own political consulting firm. So this is more than just, I would think, this is more than just some of these media personalities trying to figure out. And this is what we don't know, right? Because we know from documents that were released after the Dominion lawsuit at Fox News, we know that Tucker Carlson is not above misleading his audience, right?
Sure.
Like that was part of the evidence that was presented in that Dominion lawsuit, that I think there's assumptions sometimes that some of these really big profile, huge audience folks, we were using grifter earlier, but like it's not always just from their morality of where they're speaking. And is this more about them breaking because of what they truly feel, or because Trump can't get reelected in 2028 and they're starting to break out? Like, what is the next wave of who is the next right wing person? Who is the, what is the sentiment? Where is like the party going? Where is the movement going? And trying to break with Trump in order to get ahead of it and take their audience to a new direction.
Is this the right time to separate from the last guy and start thinking about the new guy or girl who's going to be representing conservatives? He's not the first, because Alex Jones has sort of jumped off the track. And there's
some other news for Alex Jones, yeah, we'll get to in a second.
Which is just hilarious and amazing. What a turnaround that's going to be. Here's another one. Megyn Kelly. Blowing him up. She lost her mind. I just watched this clip yesterday. When the president said, what was his terminology for destroying Iran? Annihilate their civilization or something like that. I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember the exact terminology. It was like that. And we blew it up on our show. Other people said we overreacted. Well, when you say, you know, destroy a civilization, hard to overreact to that because it's, you know, pretty much all consuming. But she's like moved on, at least on the Iran story. So if you lose Tucker Carlson, Alex Jones, Megyn Kelly, and some other people that you mentioned earlier, I guess it's either the timing's right, or at some point, I've had this conversation with Bill a million times, McCaution. You cross a point where I can't do this anymore. I can't support this stuff. And we were talking before the show. I think the holdouts are the Laura Ingrams, the Sean Hannitys. Because Sean Hannity basically denied his faith for this guy. He said, I'm not a Catholic anymore because the Pope went after Donald Trump. I mean, that's a pretty, you really got to be on that platform and with Donald Trump and say, yes, I'm going to deny my faith for this guy. Even though this guy, as we talked about the other day, has, you know, ticked off a few of the Ten Commandments that he not really following. It's an amazing transformation. But again, not surprised, because I was never on that train.
Do you, is any of your friends who are self-proclaimed MAGA, do you see any of them breaking because of the media personalities that they follow and feeling like they're following them versus staying still defending Donald Trump?
They don't have to rationalize anymore because, one, they either don't talk about politics or like not interested in that, with the understanding that he's not going to run again, so they don't have to vote for him again. Or two, it's like, what's the alternative? You know, the Kamala argument that we had from 2024. I don't know. The argument would be sanity, would be doing things normally, not like blowing up the image of the United States in the rest of the world, not blowing up a country or countries, not working on this weird... The weird thing I can't get past, this is a president who campaigned on being the peace president. A guy who didn't want to fight wars. He's fighting wars all over the place. He's talking about ground troops potentially. He's asking, you had this on our show notes yesterday, but I don't even think we ever got to it. Car companies, car manufacturers, to go into the weapons business. When's the last time that happened? I don't know, World War II? Yeah. Maybe? I mean...
A lot of those companies really did a great rebrand for themselves. They did, a lot of those German companies still survived.
So when I hear, you know, I'm not a Tucker Carlson fan. I think he's sort of a whack job. And let's not forget that he's selling a podcast or selling.
Yeah, that's
things.
What I mean. Like some of this is also click. This is audience retention. This, I mean, look at it. Like he does this, and now here we are talking about it, right? Like it is news making because he is that high profile.
Yeah, and if you were all in on the madness. I'm not going to be a Tucker Carlson supporter. Just
you wouldn't vote for him for president if he runs in 28?
No. You think that's going to happen?
It's been floated that is...
That would not be on my list. Maybe I'm naive, and I don't think... I think she said she's not going to... Nikki Haley said she's not going to run in 2028.
What is she even doing right now?
She does a lot of public speaking, because every time I see
her... You can make a lot of money doing that.
Absolutely. You can be a millionaire doing that. And she's probably, as a former governor, and certainly as a candidate for president, probably a very desirable speaker.
Did she write a book?
Yeah, she did, but I have not read it.
Surprised. Such a fan.
I just think she's normal. Conservative. Normal. Those things can actually coexist, but not in this administration. Yeah.
All right, should we talk about Alex Jones's future?
Remember InfoWars? The new owners.
New logo. Google the new logo of InfoWars while we're at break.
Google it. Check it out. Google that.
Personal injury lawyers seem like they're a dime a dozen, but Jeff Zergibel and I are not about t-shirts or cartoons. At Pasternak and Zergibel, we focus on serious cases and real results for injured Wisconsinites. We are two of Wisconsin's best injury lawyers. I'm Frank Pasternak of Pasternak and Zergibel. Our clients trust Pasternak and Zergibel because we show up, we listen, and we fight for you. If you need help, go to Pasternak and Zergibel at InjuryWisconsin.com. That's InjuryWisconsin.com.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. He is Steve Scafidi. And when this story first broke over a year ago, so this would have been 2024, I was delighted. And then it had a lot of legal battles over the last 17 months. But as of yesterday, The Onion, yes, The Onion, originated in Madison, Wisconsin, says it has a deal to take over Alex Jones's InfoWars. And it plans to relaunch the right-wing site as a parody of itself. And the new logo, the O in InfoWars...
It's an onion!
...is an onion, and it's a rainbow.
Yeah, they're nailing them on both ends there. I don't like Alex Jones. I don't hate a lot of people, but I hate him because what he did...
What he did to Sandy Hook. I mean, it's unforgivable what he's done to the parents of the Sandy Hook victims.
The things he said about them, the lies he said out loud... The fact that these people got persecuted to the point where they had to, like, move.
After losing their child.
Yeah. And again, the saddest day of my life was the day that happened, because I can remember it. And I had some amazing conversations later on in that day with people who could not believe in a country as great as ours that this was happening, where first graders were being slaughtered. And so somebody that profited, well, hopefully that money's been gotten back, but profited from that tragedy... with his InfoWars and all his celebrity and whatever fame he has, It's a good slap in the face for him that now a parody of that site will be used against him and other idiots who say stupid things out loud for money. And the fact that The Onion's doing it, it's perfect.
It's perfect. Yeah. So under the terms of the agreement, The Onion's parent company, Global Tetradome, I don't even know how to pronounce it, would pay $81,000 per month to license the Infowars.com domain name and associated intellectual property, including its name. As first reported by the New York Times, the deal would run for 6 months with an option to renew for another 6 months. The agreement must be approved by a judge before it takes effect. So it'll be very funny to see the amount of people who stop following InfoWars and then the amount of people who start following InfoWars because of the content switch.
I'm just kind of curious what this is going to look like and what it'll sound like and just the fun
they can
have.
Hopefully it'll be
funny. Most of what they do is funny.
More satire. Never enough satire.
And, you know, the fact that I'm sure Alex Jones still has money because he made a lot of money.
I think he did a lot of hiding it, too.
Yeah.
As to not go bankrupt with when he lost these big cases against the Sandy Hook parents.
And that's upsetting that he can continue to have a life of luxury when he's essentially a liar and a bad person. But in some small way, this sort of in your face, you want to play around? Here you go. He'll be constantly reminded of the cruelty that he bestowed upon the families who certainly didn't deserve it. And frankly, whatever they get out of this is worth it because this dude is a bad dude, Alex Jones. Only bad things for him is my wish.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't hate a lot of people, but I hate him.
Yeah. Fair.
Quick break.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen. He is Steve. And it is that time of show. Time of the show where we remind you that you should subscribe to our newsletter. It is a great read. It's a great way to get all the links to the different stories that we've been discussing throughout the week. You get recommendations to things that we're watching, reading,
Wisconsin stories.
You stole mine?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which one?
Bobcat story. I had to tell that story. I'm a hunter. So.
That video is... I don't know. So Journal Sentinel.
We're going to link to the video.
Yeah, republished a video of a turkey hunter who captured a bobcat hunting him.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
It is wild to see how, like, wild big cats. I mean, I know that you said that bobcats are way bigger and will...
It's not like a mountain lion cougar, but it's scary.
You said mountain lion, not bob. So bobcats are smaller.
Yeah.
But just watching the intensity...
Oh, yeah.
Of
stalking
them. Yes, exactly. All right, so you already have your story for the week.
Yeah.
But yes, text EXTRA 855-616-1620 to get subscribed to our newsletter. Comes out every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
We got a new sexy platform that you it's an easier read. And it's not
getting, it is easy.
And it's not getting stuck in people's spam and trash like the other.
Or the engagement is like off the charts. So you're not just getting a newsletter. People are actually engaging with it, which I love.
And I remembered to put the right survey in this week.
You did. Yeah. What's our question this week? Are you afraid?
Eagles?
That would be a hot
people got fired up on the text line.
Yeah. And I encourage you, I'm not going to get into it now, but go find out why live testing is required before you start blowing me up. Just do some homework. I'll admit I didn't do all the homework I needed to do on that story, but it's a big story. And our teammates actually did some reporting on it, so I'm gonna check out their reporting. Maybe we'll do a follow-up at some point.
Well, you said you wanted to hunt down a... I don't know if I should use that word. Contact
right.
Someone who works in drug testing.
I do.
That could be interesting.
Yeah. All right, so there's like so many stories we could
talk about. What do you want to talk about when we come back? Do you want to talk about the liquor cabinet? Or do you want to talk about marriage?
Can we do both?
I mean, we only have a half hour, so we can try.
All right. Well, let's start with marriage. Maybe it'll blend into the liquor cabinet.
I doubt it. The liquor cabinet meaning the administration.
Yeah.
Let's do marriage first. I feel like we've done a lot of negativity.
I feel like this is going to be a good topic because a lot of people are married. Some are thinking about getting married. Some are not going to get married.
Some are not going to get remarried.
Some are not getting remarried. A lot of people just living their lives. They don't need the piece of paper and the ceremony. I don't know. Let's dig into that. Let's see what our audience thinks.
Okay.
Where they're at on this.
How do you feel about the fact that the institution of marriage is falling out of style? There is lots of data that is showing that there's more and more single people then like decade over decade, the amount of people who identify as being single is increased. And I think it was it New York Times?
I don't know. But
yes, New York Times wrote about this. And so I said, why marriage for so many is less appealing than ever. From Gen Z to Gen X, a pause in the march to the altar or a decision to skip it altogether is becoming more common. Is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Why do you think it's happening? 855-616-1620, and we'll get into it after the news.
And are we biased because we're both married?
Mm. Fair. All right, Steve. So let's play out a alternative universe for you. Mm. You and Kathy never get married, and you just are cohabitants for the last... How long have you been married? 40 years?
41 this year.
41 this year. How different do you think life would be if you would have never gotten married, but still been together?
So other than the actual...
The legal document. Would everything be the same?
I don't know. I think so. I mean...
Because you would be the first one to admit that you would be worse if Kathy wasn't in your life.
Yeah, I'd be a worse person. Yeah,
like just a perpetual bachelor, lifelong bachelor. You'd be insufferable.
I wouldn't be Kovalik.
You'd be so insufferable Clavicular. If there was no women Clavicular. In your life, like kind of correcting.
Well, why do you say that?
Because I think most people, I think everyone, I saw Clavicular. A great video the other day. Have you ever seen any of the clips from Subway Takes, I think is the name of the show. It's a comedian, and it's... It's a pretty popular show now, but it's basically he's on the subway in New York and they're using the Metro cards and he's like, what's your take? And it's, I mean, now like all celebrities have gone on the show, but it was two guys, I think they maybe are musicians, and there's like their take was having a sister is a cheat code to succeeding in life because they're like, your sister will just keep you in check. Like your sister will keep you humble and with all these things. But I also think the right wife and potentially daughters, you know, it's just kind of, I would say the same thing about my husband. But yeah. Anyways, why are we talking about this?
Because the trends to be married is on a downward spiral. And I actually, it's not part of the New York Times story, but I kind of looked it up. Going back to 19, and you asked me a question, I don't know if it was on the air or off, like what's the definition of age or the, you know, delineation of age. I don't know, but it just marriage certificates going back to 1949. It was 78.8% of, I'm assuming, adults got married.
So over 3/4.
Now it's
were married or got married at all?
Got married.
Okay, so even if they got
highest
divorced.
Marriage rate. So in that year, 1949, people got married at that rate of adults.
It's high.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, right?
Wait, does it say what it is now?
The last number that I see here is 2024. It was 47%, less than half. And I'm thinking just people that I know single people my age. I know people that are divorced. I know people that got married a couple times.
But again, so this goes back to, I misspoke 2 weeks ago or whatever, when I was talking about Artemis, and I said women couldn't have credit cards. It wasn't that women couldn't have credit cards until 1974. It's that the Equal Credit Act banned banks from discriminating against women just because they were women. So they didn't. So right. Before that, most banks could say you needed a cosigner as your husband or your father.
Yeah, men had all the power.
I also still think the marriage thing and how it is tied to women having more choice, especially economic choice, is tied to that. Because the truth is, a lot of stats is show like the most successful people are married men, and like single men not as successful as married men. Why? Because they often have a wife at home who's taking care of a lot of aspects of their life that they don't have to worry about, so they can just focus on work. And I think there's a lot of I'm not talking about my own marriage, but there's a lot of marriages where wives get the short end of the deal. And I think that was true. But before we had no-fault divorce, before we had women's ability to get access credit and have their own financial freedom, I think marriage was a lot of times the only option to have an economically viable life as a woman. And as that became less of the case, it's interesting that we've seen the trend of marriage go down.
Yeah, I mean, it started the rapid decline in the late 60s, and you know, that's sort of the awareness of women, right? You know, feminism and all that's sort of where that started, and it's continued to slow decline. Although it's sort of leveling at like half, Let me ask you this. In a perfect world, is marriage the best route for most people, do you think? Does it give
in a perfect world, does it
give
mean?
Does it give the husband and wife in a perfect world equal standing financially, whatever? And this is kind of where I'm going. Does it give their children, if they choose to have children, the best life opportunities if they're married in a relationship? Or does it not matter to you?
Well, I mean, I think because ultimately I know marriage in some sense is the moral side of it and the potentially the church side of it, of the commitment you're making to each other. But in practicality, like, it's a piece of paper and it gives you legal protections, right? As far as
it's legal and faith-based. Yeah.
No, exactly. But as far as why you do it, I don't know. What am I?
There's also tax implications.
There's tax implications. Yeah. There's rights you have if your partner gets sick.
Yes.
I think there's certain things I have to imagine that have to do with having children. So there's like protections and things that you get by being married, which I get. But I also understand the emotional side of it that, you know, you ask anyone who's just gotten married, especially if they lived with their partner before they got married, they're like, how's marriage? They're like, exactly the same. So I also understand not wanting to tie yourself legally to someone because it's a lot harder to undo than just breaking up.
All right. I'm going to read some of the texts after the break. I'm curious what you think. Does marriage matter anymore, given what we just talked about? The fact that women have the rights they were denied for all those years. You talked about the credit card thing. The fact that men had all the financial power in relationships well into this, you know, the century. So it's scary. It's truly scary. But what do you think? 855-616-1620. Marriage, less than half now.
What's a bigger deal? People not getting married or people having less kids?
Good question. We'll answer after the break. Marriage make your dreams come true? Well, it did for me. I'm pretty sure it did for you, too.
It did.
Yeah.
But I took my time. I didn't get married until I was 36.
That's taking your time. Yeah, yeah.
And no long-term relationships before that, that I thought some of those I thought were going to end in marriage. Happy that they didn't. Happy I married the person that I married. And happy it took me, you know, that's my only regret. It's not a regret. But I only wish I would have met Mike sooner so we would have been able to have more time together, especially before having kids. But when you get married at 36 and you look at your biological clock, you're like, we better get on this.
I have the opposite thing. I knew Kathy in high school, but we didn't start dating until college.
Because you needed to mature.
I what?
You needed to mature before you could handle Kathy.
Yeah, I was very immature. Yeah. I'm very mature.
All right, going back to my question. What is, however you want to frame it, what's worse, what's better? What's worse for society, the trend of less people getting married or the trend of less people having children?
Less people having children.
I think there's more.
We're a declining population.
Yeah, I think there's more impact to society on less children than less marriage.
We got to figure that out. Otherwise, you get these situations like it's happening now with all the boomers aging.
Yeah.
And there's no one to take care of us when we need that care. Are you going to take care of me?
You got two daughters. I'm not taking care of you.
They don't even live in the States. Come on now.
I got my own parents to take care of.
From the text line, I'm curious what you think about this. More people are staying single because it's harder to find partners that value equity. I thought everyone's so aware now. We're so woke. We all know what we have to do in relationships.
I don't know if that's everybody.
Huh? Are guys the problem? Let me just ask you a point. Are guys the problem?
I don't know. I think it's more complicated than that.
Of course it is.
But I do think that there's something to be said as far as when women have options, men need to step up their game because it is not by default that you end up married anymore. It is by choice and by like both. Not because like also just love is enough, right? If you're not in a good partnership of like we are doing this together, just because I love you doesn't mean we're in a healthy relationship.
No. And people say that word all the time. They often don't mean it. This is from the 414. I think marriage is still important. I eloped with my husband. I was 18, a month out of high school in 1989, and we are still married. Not that it's always been easy, certainly, but we have struggled together through the ups and downs. That's a marriage. Ups and downs.
And I do believe that when done right, I am convinced that doing life together with someone is easier than doing it alone.
Absolutely.
But doing life with the wrong person is harder than doing it alone.
Yeah. Someone's mad I referenced clavicular. That dude is
weird.
He almost overdosed the other day.
Yeah.
Check it out on our podcast, by the way.
But yeah, I would say the hierarchy of doing life, if you can find the right person and do it together, like my life is infinitely easier because I have a partner who shares responsibilities with me at home.
Yeah.
Of like the divided, and not just parenting, right? Like keeping the house clean, the yard, like just all the different stuff it takes to go into the grocery store. It's all the shared responsibilities and chores and errands that we can do. Life is easier. But doing that, like when you're in a relationship where you have to do all of that anyways, and you have to deal with the emotional ups and downs of maybe a erratic or volatile partner, like there's a reason why some people have major glow ups after they get divorced, because it's just not having a cranky, angry person in the house all the time will really do wonders for your skin.
Here's my line. Your partner should make you better. If they don't, maybe you're with the wrong partner, right? They should enhance whatever you are. And you should do the same thing for them.
But that's a tall order.
Absolutely.
Right? Which is, if that's what people are starting to expect, maybe that's why the numbers are down.
We didn't even get to all the young people struggles that are going, because we work with tons of young people. All I hear about is the relationships that aren't going anywhere, with a few exceptions. Like, what are you doing? Like,
are you hearing all these conversations?
I spend a lot of time in the lunchroom.
Do they ask for your advice?
Not really. I'm just sort of hearing it, you know?
You should offer it.
I've been married 41
years. You should interject.
I'm now the guy. We are the couple.
I want to hear you sit at the intern table and talk about relationship status.
Hey, I know the interns better than you do.
I think I'm not arguing that.
Yeah. But we are now the couple, Kathy and I. When we go to weddings, we're like one of the last ones standing at these damn things. I don't want to be that. I mean, it's awesome, but Jesus, I'm old. I don't like that.
All right. When we come back.
Fun.
There's new Falcons going to be born, and you get to name them, and you maybe could name them after Steve and I. We'll be back in a minute. All right, so this was a great surprise this morning. I had no idea this was coming, but every year, We Energies, it's one of their best PR moves that they do. They have the Peregrine Falcon chicks, and, you know, we watch them with the eggs, and then they hatch. And so now there is a naming contest for the chicks.
Mm.
And this year, customers will vote to name the chicks after their favorite news anchors. And who's on there? You and I.
Yes.
There's a lot of people you can choose from. There's TMJ4 anchors, Fox 6 anchors, WISN 12 anchors, CBS 58, Spectrum News, and News Radio 628 WTMJ. So, and what they've done is taken a play on everyone's name to try to make it bird related.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am Kristen Prey.
Yeah, you caught that, because that's not how you say
Bry.
Bry.
But it looks like Prey.
It does.
It's almost too close to my name.
What do you think of mine?
Yours is... I'm saying this objectively, not just because I share a show with you. Steve Squatweedy is amazing.
That's good.
I might just call you that. Hey, Squatweedy.
Whoever put this together, great. Eric Birdstad, Egg Matzik, Vince Falcano, Flown McCure, I don't get. Maybe that's because he...
John McCure, Flown McCure, I don't know.
That Julia Feathers?
Some of them are a little bit of a stretch. But I'm a big fan of this. So if you would like to vote, please vote for us. Text Falcon to 855-616-1620 and vote for Kristen Prey and Steve Squatweedy. We'll see you tomorrow.